the Brandon Sherry Oddcast, sponsored by Metashare. To find out more about the radio show or to order Brandt's new book, Blessed Are the Misfits, go to BrandtHanson.com.
Greetings, podcast people. Hopefully you have enjoyed the special podcast we have put together for you. And here's another one with our friend Lisa Anderson. This was a lot of fun. We actually recorded this on Valentine's Day. Lisa is the director of Young Adults for Focus on the Family. She's the host of The Boundless Show, which Brandt has been on several times. She's also author of the book, The Dating Manifesto, which is a fantastic book. So we're going to talk about being single. We're going to talk about putting yourself out there. In a sanctified way, of course, about singles being friends with married couples and a lot of other stuff we get into, including Lisa reveals her Christian celebrity crush. And it is mind blowing. Like, I cannot express to you in words how much you have to hear who it is and how you're probably going to have to pause the podcast to process who her Christian celebrity crush is. So that's coming up. We start off, Brandt was late to the recording of this, which is funny because I'm always the one that's late. He was late getting to the recording of it. So Lisa and I start talking about our moms and taking care of our moms as single women. And I was going to cut it out, but Brandt said leave it in because even if you're married and you have elderly parents, you may be able to relate. If it starts to get a little too weepy for you, I mean, I don't think I actually cried. That was close. If it starts to get a little weepy to you, fast forward about 5 minutes and you'll get back into the swing of what the podcast is. All right. Thank you, guys. Love you. Enjoy. Brandt Hansen is stuck in traffic. I got a text from him, which is very funny because that's always my text to him because I'm late for everything. And so traffic is always my go-to of why I'm not where I'm supposed to be.
So he's pulling the traffic card.
He is. He's doing the Sherry thing, which I thought was very interesting. So anyway, we can start talking and then he'll jump in here at some point. How's everything going?
Great. Going okay, although it's been just a rough season. I was talking to him when he was here. My mom just had a real decline after Christmas.
Oh, boy.
And so, so she's now, she lost mobility and lost a lot of cognition. And so I had to put her, it's actually right next door to me, but in a memory care place, but also with hospice support. So just kind of looking at, you know, well, are we heading towards the end? I mean, she's kind of perked up a little bit, but her big challenge now is swallowing. She's just having trouble putting two and two together.
Yeah.
So her eating hasn't been good. And so that was rough. And
how old is your mom?
She is, she'll be 89 next month.
Wow.
So, so she's, you know, getting up there and not afraid to see the Lord at all. But I think for me, the biggest grief was just seeing the sudden, I mean, we were at Christmas, we were eating ribs at Texas Roadhouse and walking around Costco. And within 2 days, she couldn't lift a fork to her mouth or sit up or anything. So that's just been a lot of grief kind of in that. And of course, she was with me for 2 years in my house. And that was super hard too, you know, but now it's like trading a heart for a heart. So I tell you, but
no, I totally get that. I while we were on the Misfits tour, my mom got sick. And and that was, I totally understand the feeling.
Yeah.
It's
now,
so.
Does she live near you or is she?
She lives with me.
Like from you?
She lives with me.
Oh, she does?
Yeah,
okay.
She does. So I moved her with me about 2.5 years ago. And I probably shouldn't get there because I'll probably start
doing
losing
okay now?
She's, I can just see that she's slower. And that's different because she's such a force of nature. She always has been, like, you know, my whole life. She's like 5'11", almost 6 foot. She's gorgeous. She's active. She's smart. She's just been all of these things my whole life. And I see it in her eyes. Yeah. I see it slowing down. And I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to process it. I don't know how to... I don't know. And then again, this is my single life, right? So I take care of her. I take care of her sisters. As that weeds away, then it's like, then if I've allowed myself to find my identity in that, which if I'm honest, I have a lot of it. Then it's now what, you know what I mean?
Right.
And also the fact that, I'm so dialed into that of taking care of her and being very happy that I have the resources to do that. So.
Well, and even the process of grieving the role reversal, like that's super hard.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, having to let go of my mom as my confidant, my prayer partner, and so losing that mom figure and having, you know, me now be the parent, I mean, that was a whole beast to get through. So,
yeah, I'm not ready for that, Lisa. I'll be honest with you. I am nowhere near ready to be the adult. Because that's what's going to happen, right? So Brant asked me, do I feel old? Like he said, he feels old. Well, he feels old because he has grown kids, right? And you're navigating all that. Well, I don't have that. So I always still feel like the kid because I'm taking care of my mother. Yeah. She's there. Her sisters are there. They all look at me like I'm still 16 years old. So in my mind, I still feel like that. So when that all, as I see it changing, I don't want to acknowledge it. So I know I'm in total denial. I know I am. Okay, so Brant Hansen is here. We've just been crying together, Brant Hansen, so you can come in and just get to...
Seriously?
Put all of that. Well, she started talking about her mom.
Not all of us have the charmed lives that Brant Hansen does.
No, goodness, it never will.
I timed it. I wanted to see how long it would take before you said something hostile, and it was 12 seconds.
That's pretty good, actually.
Crying and hostility... right off the bat.
I don't know what you want from two single women on Valentine's Day. That's it. Crying and hostility.
Just for me to cope, I'm just having to start blame shifting. I mean, it's been my MO.
Hey, I haven't tried that. I'm going to try that.
Can I shake this up a little bit?
Yeah. Like, yes.
I want to go back to whatever you guys were doing, but I told Sherry, Lisa, about your wildly inappropriate celebrity crush.
What?
Did
but you didn't tell me
that?
Who. No, you didn't. We started talking about our moms. We were completely derailed. So what? You didn't tell me who, though.
Do you want to?
Are we talking about my? Are we talking about my Christian crush?
Yeah.
Or.
You got other crushes, secular crush.
Well, I don't. I do have other crushes. I mean, whatever. But my more realistic crush is Bill Gaither. So that's my more attainable.
Right. That's the one.
Because he's still alive.
Still
alive. And I'm not saying, and I told Brant this, I'm not trying to break him and Gloria up. I'm just saying that should the Lord choose to take her before him, I'm just saying there's time and there's opportunity. So why do we need to be all weird about it?
I tell you what, I don't know that I can emotionally process a Lisa Gaither. I need time to really
weird.
Let that.
It's just so weird. It's just there's
what
so
is
much
it?
Here.
Is
there... I can sing all the verses of Because He Lives.
Yeah.
In parts.
Me too, and... but I'm not. Okay, hang on. Because this is like
can't marry Bill Gaither. That is totally different.
He's married. Saying... Okay, so this is like a weird David Bathsheba thing. Except
Bill Gaither's up there on the roof.
He's on the rooftop.
I know.
And Lisa, if she could, I get the impression, would send Gloria off to the front line.
Well, no, I'm not doing anything untoward. I'm just waiting in the wings. And I'm just saying that it's the sovereignty of God that's going to determine this.
Yes.
Don't bring the sovereignty of God
into this. Move by your spirit, Lord. Move by your spirit.
I'm just saying that in God's timing, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Right. Yeah.
If Bill needs another person to like write an occasional lyric and or speak, sing a song.
All
with
you're
him
saying is why not you?
So, yeah.
Why not me?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted that to be out in the open because I want, for whatever else we're talking about, I want Sherry to know who she's dealing with, all right? I want that out. I want all the cards on the table.
That's, I do have to pray about it. I've got to pray about it. And,
but Sherry, I'm just saying, you better not all go after him now. Just
no, I want you to know that is not a problem in any way, shape, or form. You got that, girl.
Okay, well, enough.
It's a game changer.
Enough.
Okay.
So, literally, we could have just blown the whole podcast.
Well, yeah, we could have. Yeah.
Because we've already gone. Like, at some point, I'm going to have to step in. I just wanted to touch base with this and then move on. But, all right. So, what else did you want to talk about? What were you guys talking about when I came in?
We were talking about our moms. That's a dreary topic. Let's not do that.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Oh,
you asked.
Yeah, I did, and I am interested, but I really am.
Yeah.
So I did want to bring this up, though, if I can.
Yes.
And that was, I saw something in the news a couple days ago. Lisa, I don't know if you saw this. It was a Politico article about single people and married people and sexuality and all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. But what was really interesting, over the course of the last 10 years or something like that, the number of women who were single women who said that marriage is a very important part of life has gone up dramatically, which I didn't see coming. But they also had the same age range of guys they were asking, and it went way down. That same thing.
Oh, interesting.
Marriage is really important. This cannot be good.
No.
Yeah.
To a situation that was already not
bad.
Good. Yeah.
But I just wonder, what you're looking at from what you deal with. You talk about this stuff every day, and you deal with people who are single every day, and you do it in the context of a Christian worldview. Like, are you seeing people viewing marriage any differently than you did when you started doing this, like with Boundless a while back? Or has there been any changes?
Yeah, I would say overall it seems like seen more of a malaise towards marriage, kind of like with women, it's more is this ever going to happen? Probably not. So I don't want to be discouraged. And so I'm just going to not think about it. I think as we look specifically with millennials, especially younger millennials who I have in my sphere, it's in fact, I think the statistic now is that 25% of millennials say that they're not going to get married. And largely that is because it's not that they don't value marriage. Millennials value marriage as much as the greatest generation, so their grandparents. It's the boomers and Xers who are more cynical towards marriage. But the millennials don't really think they can do it successfully because they haven't seen it modeled well in their parents. So boomers, being the largest divorce generation in history, the millennials are like, yeah, I'm probably not going to get married. And the thing is, because they're considering cohabitation and everything else as a feasible alternative. So they're like, you know, I'm not going to get married, but I'll be in a very committed relationship, or I will be, you know, I will still be sexually active, or I will be. So they're going to try to play at marriage or practice marriage. And then if it, quote, works out, and maybe they've dated a person for 8-9 years and they're still hanging on, well, maybe we'll consider marriage. I don't know. But I'm not going to, quote, rush into it. That's what I'm seeing.
Wow. That's a recipe for disaster for everything that I have seen, that example of. I mean, I have quite a few friends who have tried that option, and then what you end up doing is, for lack of better terminology, wasting 7-8 years of your life pretending. That's what it is, really.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, so they're legitimately trying to date, but they're settling for less. Or they're getting caught up in what I call the friendlationship, where they're just hanging on, hopeful for something romantic to happen. It is, to any outside observer, absolutely not going to happen. But they're, you know, they've watched every 80s rom-com, and so they're pretty convinced that this person that they started out hating is going to wake up and realize that they're, you know, their soulmate. And I actually had a friend who did that for 7 years. She was in a non-relationship for 7 years and actually had to break up from a non-relationship with a guy, and he's just like, what? We were just friends. Yet they were very, I would say he absolutely led her on, and I would say she absolutely bought it and allowed it to happen, and it took her 2 years to get over that guy. So went a decade of her life.
Yep.
And, you know, meanwhile, no one else is asking her out because they think these two are dating. So she's just caught in this, like, stall out of nothingness, and she grieved it. You know, it was sad.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of times, like, obviously can only speak for women, that you feel like, well, what if nothing else comes along? What if no one else comes along? You don't have anything now. Like, I've had to look in the mirror and say that to myself. Right. Mm-hmm. You have nothing now.
Yeah.
So this holding on to this pipe dream or whatever you've created this to be in your imagination is nothing. And so if you let it go and you have nothing, you actually have the exact same thing without the emotional baggage. Hard to do, though.
Well, and I see many women who will say, okay, well, I can't just sit here and do nothing. So I'm going to, and it's either like go on 4 or 5 different online dating sites or start dating apps, or they feel like it kind of gives them some kind of forward momentum to try something. which is fine. And I'm not even against, I'm for online dating if it's mm-hmm. done well, you know, done with some measure of savvy. But to just start signing up for sites so you hope there's some activity and something's going to come of it, it's just nuts. I mean, women are having to wade through the nonsense of these guys. You know, I talked to a friend the other day, and I'm like, you know, she's telling me about this profile, and she's like, well, I'm pretty sure he's a Christian. And I'm like, he says he's a Christian because he's from Texas. What in the, you know, and yet she's going to have a conversation with him for weeks on end, giving up all kinds of like emotional information about herself and whatever in hopes that she'll ferret something out of him. And I'm like, if he's not putting it front and center, it's not there. I don't even try to wade through and ferret it out of him. That's ridiculous.
Man, I'm seeing this anecdotally a lot more. And that is a guy, maybe he's a young guy, or maybe he's in his 30s or even 40s, who is available, mm-hmm. stringing mm-hmm. people along emotionally. And it's done in a Christian context, might mm-hmm. be through church or something. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessarily sexual, mm-hmm. although that might be part of it too, but just stringing emotionally, like being really good, intimate friends, and then be like, well, hey, I didn't promise you anything. Because it feeds his ego mm-hmm. to have women connect to him and tell him how wonderful he is or something. Mm-hmm. But he never, like, you've got to be aware that you're doing that to a woman emotionally.
And yeah. a woman has to be aware that it's being done.
Right. And that's where guys are, you know, women are feeding men's need for connection and companionship without getting anything in return. So we're seeing this, like the level of connection is way beyond the level of commitment in the relationship. Mm-hmm. And women are settling for it. And that's where I'm like, shame on you. Because mm-hmm. it may be, you know, again, like you said, Brandon, it doesn't have to be sexual. And I'm not going to say, I mean, these guys may be into porn. They may be into, they may have, I know guys who, as they've aged, they've just kind of like, and this sounds controversial, but they've just kind of asexualized. They've kind of become these church guys that are just, you know, either online, and so they have these weird pen pal relationships with girls where they're able to give and receive information and support and whatever, or they're in their own churches. And I had to, like, break up with a group of friends over this because it was, my girlfriends and I did it, because we were kind of hanging out with these guys from church, all nice guys, great guys, no problem there, but none of them were asking us out. None of them were, they were not interested in us. And we're like, why are we spending our weekends in random activities with these guys when clearly this isn't going anywhere? We're giving up our time. We could be doing better things and more productive things. And so we had to just collectively break up with them and say, you're no longer going to have access to our time and attention. And it was kind of a weird thing.
That's really fascinating. But I think it's pretty common now. And I do think, I'm trying not to find humor in that because it's but the idea of a collective breakup. Like, it's not you guys, it's us. But
no, we said it was them.
Okay. We said no. Oh, no, it's you.
It's you guys.
You, all of you.
Dear Johns.
And Jonathans.
Yeah.
Dear Jonathans.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what the Bible calls guarding your heart, right? I know we're not supposed to be quote unquote guarded, but. If you know, like I know, for instance, for me personally, just being transparent, quality time is something that is very, that's my love language. So if you spend 10 minutes with me, I'm like, oh, well, I guess we're going to get married. So I have to guard myself against that. If a guy is starting to do that or starting to just make little time for me or something like that, that'll send me over the moon. And I have to be able to say, wait a minute, what is this? What is happening here? And stop it before, hopefully I'm at the age where I know, okay, you're about to get in trouble and you're too, what I say to myself, all the time, you're too old for this. Like you're too old to go down this road. This is a 20-something, not to disparage 20-year-olds. This is a 20-something-year-old road that you've gone down and you're not going down that road anymore. But it is the guarding of your heart, I think.
Well, and it can be crazy making because I would be, you know, Sherry, I'd be in a situation like that. And of course, I'm like, yeah, I'm like an interesting person. Of course, you're going to be interested in me. And so let me share even more information about myself that's going to make me even more interesting. And then I've just completely like, you know, it flooded this guy, and he's like flatlining, and I'm like, oh my word, you know, and I'm just shocked that he doesn't think I'm the best, you know, best thing on earth. And he's like, yeah, I was actually just, you know, trying to make small talk or whatever. And then I'm all disappointed, and I'm like, oh, I think we had potentially had something. He must be breaking up with me.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we just had one conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just coffee at Starbucks once. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned how millennials don't see successful marriages per se. What can be, what do you think can be done about that? Like, what's a good way to do it? 'Cause I know one way is to get up on a stage and go, my marriage is incredible, you know, and
boo.
No one wants that.
Boo.
See, there's already booing. And did you hear the booing? 'Cause I heard booing.
Well,
I am booing.
What do you think about
that? I think the better way is to get up on stage and say, my marriage isn't incredible, but it's good. And it has its ups and its downs. And I would love to share with you about both of those. I mean, I think, you know, again, I have this love-hate relationship with single groups in churches, because I feel like we need our tribe. You know, if you've moved to a new city for a job or whatever, you have to make connections with peers. And that is totally legit. But you can't just be this little singles ghetto that moves in a pack and does everything together. I mean, for, you know, I always tell young adults, if you want to get married, start hanging out with normal married people, like people that you feel like they probably have good marriages. But, you know, go over and start folding some laundry with that stay-at-home mom and getting, you know, talk her ear off, get what she knows. And guys, you know, you're going to have to go to that guy and be like, you know, guys have to do kind of the one-on-one invites. You know, it's not like, let's do a book study and pull out our teacups and talk about it. It's more like, hey, will you just hang out with me? Or will you show me how to do a budget? Or will you, you know, just little things that kind of make that relationship accessible. But to start and to serve alongside people in other life stages. And when I have the opportunity, when I go to churches, I always ferret out the empty nesters, you know, because I'm like, okay, you have launched your kids, hopefully successfully, and now you have the opportunity, not only with your own adult children, but with other single adults in your church, to really have a legacy piece here and pour into them and be available to them. Uh-huh. And what are you doing to, you know, how are you inviting them and not being intimidated by them or saying, you know, oh, you guys are too cool, or you... You know, I had one stay-at-home mom type. She had grown, like, teenage sons. And she was like, oh, I don't even know what to do with you because you're, you know, you just travel and you have this exciting life and you have... And I'm like, my life is not exciting. I'm, like, trying to convince her. Mm-hmm. I do laundry. I do, you know, and it's just, I think there's this misperception across both, you know, on both sides of the aisle of that we have these lives that are completely incongruent with the other person's.
That is a great point. I remember speaking at a church. This was when I was younger. Speaking at a church, and I got done talking, and a lady came up to me. She was holding a baby. She had two little kids, like, attached to her hip on either side. And she said, how old are you? So I told her, 20, whatever. And she said, that's what I thought you were. She said, you're my age. She said, and I was sitting there listening, thinking that could be me. And I that is one of the crystallized moments in my mind as a single woman. She was the pastor's wife. So a married woman standing there with three kids. And that's what, if we're honest, a lot of church culture tells me I'm supposed to be going for. And she's sitting in the audience looking up at stage, and she's thinking, that's what I want. And I think that if we can get outside of that and be able to say these are our lives and be able to bring that together without the envy or the strife or the all the outside cultural implications and be able to glean from one another. Brant and I were talking about that on another podcast with some guys, that's how we grow. And we're not growing because we're not doing it, basically.
Yeah. Well, and to be hopeful where we are, because I need to objectively look behind me and say, I will never have the story of my peers. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to be that young mom. I'm not going to be driving a minivan. I'm not going to be homeschooling six kids. I'm not going to be, that is no longer an option for me with where I am in my age and stage. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to grieve all of that. but it doesn't mean that God hasn't given me good things. And it doesn't mean that, you know, I tell people, I'm like, statistically, it would probably be a miracle if I got married at this point. Mm-hmm. But God is in the business of miracles. Mm-hmm. And what would that look like in my story? And it could be totally legit. I mean, it could be, and so for, you know, there are many things that my married friends with kids are grieving and losses and things they didn't experience. And so just like what you said, Sherry, it's, you know, we can all learn from one another. We can all encourage one another with the ups and downs of where we are. And it doesn't mean that because God gave someone a great story that he has to deny me one.
No.
It means that he has a different story for me.
I was going to say, he's a great storyteller.
Each day.
He's a great storyteller.
Absolutely.
He can write different kinds of stories. One of the young girls here at Cure asked me, she was like, well, there's still hope. Don't you think that there's still? And I said, there is hope. I said, but she said, are you optimistic? I said, I'm always optimistic, but I'm also realistic. And so I can't live in a space where I don't acknowledge exactly what you said. Some things are not my story. They're not going to be my story. I've gotten over that. And whatever story God wants to write is great. And I think a lot of single people have to do that work. How they do that work, Lisa, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to tell them. I think God has done that work in me. Sometimes it feels like against my will. I don't always feel like I'm participating in the work, but he's doing it.
Very much. Very much. And it's this idea, and I feel like I've become more and more unpopular as I say this within the church, is that, you know, marriage is a great thing, and marriage is the default for most people, and it is biblical. The Bible begins with marriage, it ends with marriage. But singleness is not a problem to be solved.
Yeah.
I don't need to sit in church and twiddle, you know, figure out, put a committee together of how to get all these singles married in church, because, you know, until they do, they can't be truly effective.
Right.
I mean, it is not... It's not a problem to be solved, and it's not a waiting room for marriage. And so, you know, for me to be hopeful and to be optimistic, as you said, and to be active and joyful in what I have today, all I know is that my call today is that I'm single.
Mm-hmm.
I'm called to singleness today. Am I called forever? Don't know. But I can live in that and be okay with that, knowing that I can trust God with that and not get weird or creepy about it and burst into tears every time I see a mom with a young baby or something.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question related to that.
then
we'll let you go. But regarding, how do I even say this? I need more coffee. I'm sorry. We'll edit me out later.
Okay.
Because it was going great until I just started blabbing. And then it totally hit a brick wall. Like I took the ball and then deflated it. That's what I did.
And set
it's
it down.
Always, you know, when the married person tries to pipe up.
Yeah. I'll tell you all something. Oh, yes, please tell us, sir.
Yeah. I'm like the uncle who looks in. You guys are having too much fun in here.
Yes.
Yeah, we were until you just creeped us out
Thank
by
you.
Walking in the room.
So creepy.
No, I was going to say, like, there's this thing, and I know you've thought about this and probably written about it and talked about it, and that is the tension between, well, if God wants me to get married, he'll bring that person to me, so I don't need to try. Like, I don't need to get out there or be proactive or something. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of being a moving object. So I think this idea that I'm just going to sit back, and if I'm truly trusting God, I won't do anything, and he's just going to deliver me a husband, I think that's totally bogus, because I know... you know, I've used this example. Others have too. We don't do that when it comes to jobs. We don't do that when it comes to housing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else in our life do we take our hands off of and say, I'm not going to give any input. But for some reason, we think dating and spouse finding, you know, oh, well, I just better, you know, act like it's going to hit me like the flu. No. I think, you know, Proverbs 18:22 says, he who finds a wife finds what is good and finds favor with the Lord. That's an active verb, finding. It doesn't mean sitting playing Xbox and hoping your mom's going to, you know, drop someone off with pizza. And so it's very much, you know, I think it's an active pursuit. And it takes two. It is you, and it is God, and it is, you know, I told a friend the other day, because she put on her New Year's resolutions list to get married. I'm like, that is not a goal. That is not, you have to have control over a goal. You do not have control over getting married.
Mm-hmm.
God has to be involved, and hopefully this, you know, potential spouse has to be involved. But I'm a big fan of being open to marriage. I'm a big fan of, quote, putting yourself out there in whatever way that looks like. Being a bit, you know, in fact, I just spoke to college students on Thursday night, and I said, ladies, I said, you gripe about guys not stepping up and asking you out and being bold and taking risks. Meanwhile, you're moving like in packs with your girlfriends. What guy, what 20-year-old guy is going to bust into that? That's terrifying. You know, I think it was in the book Dateable, where the author talked about being at weddings and moving. She described the women who get together and go out on the dance floor at the reception, and mm-hmm. it's like 12 of them, and she described it as witches dancing around a cauldron. And I'm like, that is, I was like, I have been that. I have totally been that. You move in a pack with your girlfriends, and it's this place of safety, and yet we're great. So I was telling these girls, I'm like, go and sit by yourself at Starbucks or mm-hmm. sit by yourself at church. Be approachable. Be friendly and inviting. Be the person that looks at other people and sees them and asks good questions and cares about people and is about the business of serving God in your church and elsewhere. You know, just be who you are, and that will be attractive. Don't orchestrate or fabricate something weird, and you know, and guys put yourself, I mean, in the sense of take that risk, break into the pack and ask a girl out. You will set yourself apart from 85% of the guys out there, and you will be doing yourself a favor.
That's good.
It is. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Can I also say this? If you're older and single, for me, I've had to say, so, again, the same person here, I'm talking to one of the young girls here, said, well, what do you feel in your heart? And I said, I don't trust my heart. Mm-hmm. I don't, it's wicked. I don't know what, you know, I don't trust that. Here's what I know. I know that God has not guaranteed me a husband, that there is nothing in the Bible that says that should be something that I should be expecting from him in a way that it would be a forfeited promise. Like, but you said he didn't. And I also know that marriage is, and we talked about this on the show today, is a foreshadowing of something much, much better. Mm-hmm. And if I'm a believer in Jesus, which I am, then is it possible that he's saving me for the thing that's not the shadow? And mm-hmm. can mm-hmm. I go ahead and grieve a shadow if that's what I need to do, but understand that that he is saving me perhaps for the real thing, and process that way, and then enjoy life. And that's some of the work that I believe God has continues. It's always continuation of doing in me.
Well, and I tell singles, I'm like, you know what? Here's the encouraging news about that. Death is the great leveler. It's going to level the playing field. There is no marriage in heaven.
Yeah.
We will, you know, it is a picture here on earth, and it's a great picture, and there's a lot covenantally that God is doing with that, with married couples. But this is not our final and future story. And so, yeah, I mean, whatever God's calling you to, if that's marriage here on earth or not, you know, we have something far greater to look forward to, and that's encouraging to me.
Totally
to not
true.
Feel like I'm missing out or feel like I've, you know, kind of, yeah, like I've made some wrong turn that now is forever irretrievable. It's encouraging.
I love it, and it dovetails well with my new dating podcast I'm starting called Death is the Great Leveler Dating Podcast.
Featuring Uncle Brent.
Right. And I guess you kind of know where each episode's going. But, you know.
That sounds compelling.
Yeah.
I think you could get traction with that.
I think so, too. And honestly, I think that's a brilliant observation. I really do. Mm-hmm. I'm poking light at it. But that's where I go mentally, too, is to that. Like, this, let's live in reality. And that's part of it. And,
it's all going to end.
Yes. And what we see is a fleeting shadow, like Sherry was saying. And there's a bigger story. We cannot forget that. We have to keep reminding each other of that because we forget it so easily. And anyway, Lisa, you're awesome, and thank you so much for your time. Still a little weirded out by you-know-what.
We'll move on.
I don't appreciate getting booed during the podcast because that did happen.
It did. You're right.
This has been the Brent and Sherry Oddcast, sponsored by MediShare. To find out more about the radio show or to order Brent's new book, Blessed Are the Misfits, go to BrantHanson.com.